Hello and good evening. Mary Keene speaking. Conversations tonight. And we welcome Dr. Tom Anastasi, who's on the other line. Tom, how are you this evening?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. I want to share with our listeners just a little bit about your background. Tom Anastasi has been an SBDC business consultant and a small business owner. He teaches leadership at Harvard University School of Public Health and is the MBA director at Daniel Webster College. He also teaches at Boston University and earned 2 degrees from Harvard as well as a PhD from Boston University. Tom, we are very happy to have you with us. We'd like to talk about your new book, The Successful Entrepreneur, American Dream Done Right. So how do we start a business?
Well, this is a great time to start a business. And most people, when they start a business, they get a great idea and just charge in and put all their money into it and all their effort into it, and they become infatuated with it like someone would be infatuated with a new boyfriend or girlfriend. But that's not the best time we make decisions. The smart way to start a business is to plan. Now, I'm not talking about for months or years. I'm talking about spending maybe 10 or 20 hours really focusing on the potential for this business. How are you going to sell things? What are you going to sell? Who are you going to sell to? These are the questions that need to be asked before you start. And if you do, you're going to find out many times that this is not the right time to start the business. But when you do find it's the right time to start the business, it's going to be magic.
Tell me if you think today is a particularly good time.
Today's a very good time to start a business because a lot of people have time because they're either been laid off from work or they're unemployed, and that's when a lot of people get the business bug and think it's the best time. So just take a little bit of time and do some real preparation, and you'll find that you'll have the dream of the American, of owning a business, but you'll do it the right way, which is the way that's low stress.
Do you think that with all that's going on and with people losing jobs and hoping to get back to work, that there is more interest in trying to start a small business?
Sure, because for the people who have always said, oh, I would love to start this new business, but I have to work, I've got to earn a living. For the people who are unemployed, they have that time. And if they take that time and use it wisely, they can find that their dream really can come true. America is still the land of opportunity for many, many entrepreneurs.
Do you think that there is a way to plan? Most people have difficulty going beyond the idea, oh, I thought of a wonderful business. How many times have you heard that one?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this idea, and they start running with it without having any idea where it's going to go, and you know what happens.
Yeah, not very often will it be a success. However, in The Successful Entrepreneur, we have 3 or 4 chapters dedicated to this very subject. How do you do this? And you don't need to be a math whiz, but I use the very same techniques that I use as a consultant for very large corporations, and anyone can do them. And in the book, there's a companion website that you can have, so all the math is done for you. So all you need to assume is that Microsoft Excel is correct, and you can find that business ownership is very easy. And
what if you're not
What
if you're not a computer buff? What if you really don't? And there are still people, as you know, who
mm-hmm.
are frightened of the computer, and it's really necessary today when you start a business. What would you suggest? Where can they get help?
Well, the first thing I suggest is get over your fear of the computer, because computers today are much easier to use than they were even just a few years ago. However, the SBDC, most local libraries, can show you the basics of how to use things like Microsoft Excel and Microsoft Word. And that's really essential, especially
what
in today's business
world. What is the SBDC? Tom, are you having trouble on the sound line?
I can hear you.
Good. Okay.
I can hear
you. I'm a little worried whether the wires might be crossed. Can you tell us what the SBDC is for folks who don't know?
Yes, the Small Business Development Corporation. They're affiliated with the Small Business Administration.
And what do they do?
They help people who would like to form small businesses. They give them a lot of advice and consulting on all the things they need to know.
Is there a charge for this?
There is not a charge for this. However, for some of their programs, there's a small fee. For instance, I'm doing a program up in New Hampshire, and that program, they're charging, I think, $35 or $40 for that three-hour program.
Well, that's a small price, certainly, to get help, at least to feel comfortable and hear what other people are doing as well as what you're thinking. It gives you a chance to talk a bit with others as well.
Sure. And the SCORE, which is made up of retired executives, these are people who ran small and large corporations, lawyers, accountants, business planners, senior executives. They give people advice on small business development, and that's completely free. And that is an amazing place to start because it costs you absolutely nothing.
Well, that there are a few places you can get a program like that for nothing. How do you get capital to start? And how much you can start any kind of a business? It might be a one-person business to begin with. So what do you recommend in starting a business as to money?
The first thing I recommend is do homework. I know that sounds boring, but it's true. First thing you need to do is find out how much money you really need. The biggest reason for businesses closing is undercapitalization. And to put things positively, the biggest reasons that businesses are successful is they have enough money to do the things they need to do. How do you find this out? Well, if you go to similar businesses to yours and say, I'm not in your competitive area, I'm thinking about starting a small business. And how much money am I going to need to get started? What can I expect as far as revenues? What can I expect as far as expenses? And they're going to tell you this. And in the companion website for the book and in the book, The Successful Entrepreneur, I've got all the templates for you, all the questions to ask. It's very, very easy. And if you talk to three or four businesses like your own, you're going to find that after a while, certain trends are going to establish. So, for instance, if you're starting an ice cream stand and five or six businesses tell you, you really need to have $100,000, don't think you can start it with $20,000. So that seems like a lot of money to us. And once you've got that number, then you can go to your funding sources. Now, some people are going to self-fund, and that's okay. Other people are going to get business loans, but that's very tough to do these days.
Now, I was thinking that, yes, when you said that, get a business loan, I've heard from a lot of people, it's unbelievably difficult.
It is. It really is. The other thing you can do, and this has been very successful, is get a little bit of money from a lot of people. The musical Hairspray did this. Their investors spent no more than $5,000. And remember, they needed millions to get it going. That investment has paid off hundreds of times over because the show ran on Broadway. There was a movie made. Every time a CD is bought, you get the idea.
Yes.
If you go to friends of yours and say, could I borrow $20,000? Most people are going to look at you like you have three heads. But if you go to 40 people and ask to borrow $500 and not just borrow, you'll have a stake in the business. So if the business is wildly successful, you can make some good money on that. Now you're talking a different game, and you're going to find that. I have found that when people use this technique, they're able to get $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $75,000, a lot from a little people, really adds up.
Well, that's That's a wonderful idea. Okay, let's say you tried that and it didn't work. Now, I think you had a wonderful story in your book about a gentleman who invented a dog bed. That might be worthy right now because Tom not only tells us how to start a business, he tells us how to succeed, and he tells us how not to fail. And
right.
you probably remember that story well.
I do. I have two very long case studies in the book. Well, it's one chapter. But the person who wanted to start the dog bed, it was a pet water bed business. And what happened was is that his own dog used to like to sleep on their bed. And so he said, wait a minute, I don't like the dog sleeping on the bed. I'm allergic to dogs, so why didn't I just build a pet water bed? And so he went and he got pricing for the frames and pricing for the mattresses. He was able to find a waterbed manufacturer that could make a bed as big as a dog or a cat. And the problem was is that marketing, to make it a successful business, he'd have to sell them for about
$200. That's
and
quite a bit.
And the problem with that was is you can buy a waterbed at a furniture store for about $200. So it turned out there wasn't a market. I also talk about Ashley Hatcher. She was an insurance sales rep, and she was sick in bed with a migraine headache. And her daughter brought her up soup on a little bamboo tray, and the tray tipped. And what happened was the soup spilled all over her. So what happened was is that she said, I wish there was a tray that didn't slip. So she invented one. She ended up getting 3 patents on a special non-slip material that could be dishwashed, that was hard as nails. It was just amazing. And she got it manufactured. When she did her initial run, there was just a couple thousand units. Now she buys units in the ship container, which is about the same size as a boxcar. She's selling them all over the world. She sells them through Target, through QVC, it's just everything. And it really is a testament to the American dream and how people can sit there and take an idea and make it germinate. And what she did was she got money to start it up. She learned a lot about manufacturing. And now she's been very, very successful, and good for her.
That's certainly an unusual story. It's rare that people succeed in that way, and it happened because of an illness. It's an interesting thing how things happen. Sometimes when you least expect it, you start thinking about something, and if you have the courage, you go ahead with it, and all of a sudden it becomes something much more. That's very exciting, I'm sure. So now you talk about needing to get through a period of time before you feel that you're successful. How do you do that?
One of the things as an SBDC consultant that used to drive me crazy, and I told this many times over, and I put it in the book, and it was actually one of my motivations for writing the book, is that most people, when they planned a business, would plan it for about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. They would get all of their startup money, they would get all of their seed money, and they would just spend it right down. And they would figure, okay, we'll just worry about the first 18 months, and after that we'll worry about the next 3 years later. That's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. What people need to do is plan for 5 years. If they plan for 5 years and really think about where they're going to get money from, what about our revenues, what about our expenses, those are the people that have the most fun and the most success.
Well,
and
let's take
it. Doesn't take that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting a little bit of an echo here, so that's why I keep on missing. So go ahead.
Yes. I was wondering, how do you know if your idea will sell? What do you need to do to figure out how to do this? And I'm sorry about the fact that you're having trouble on your line. If you feel you'd like to get to another telephone, I'm happy to carry on until you do.
Why don't we keep trying, and if it gets worse, then I'll go ahead to the new phone.
All right. How do you know about selling, how you will do this? What do you need to do?
You know, it sounds very simple. It's the very same techniques I have used for very, very large corporations starting new products. What you do is you get just a few people together and pitch them on your idea, but the secret is this. If you have an idea that you're ready to spend hundreds of hours on and lots of money on, what you do is you pitch that idea and then four fictional ideas. And then you get feedback on all the ideas that you presented. The reason you present four fictional ideas is that if you pitch your idea, people are pretty nice and they're going to help you out. But you don't want that. You want to be pessimistic at this point. You really want to find out what people think. So when you have one that's a winner, you're going to know it. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Just recently, there was a man who had an idea to make a new kind of ice cream machine. And the ice cream machine could make any type of ice cream in about 4 minutes. So you go in and you say, I would like to have mint chocolate chip with a little bit of peanut butter and some M&Ms and a few other things.
Sounds pretty good.
And so it would make it for you. And he thought this was the greatest idea in the world, and he was prepared to spend $100,000 on this idea. So we got four groups of about 15 to 30 people together. And he pitched the idea for them each time, along with his four fictional ideas. And one of the areas of feedback that he heard time and again was, well, if I go to the ice cream stand with three other people, that's going to be 12 minutes I'm going to have to wait. And then other people said, you know, my ice cream stand has got 53 flavors of ice cream now. I don't need to have anything more. And he heard that from four separate groups and realized this idea was not a winner as far as a moneymaker. So he abandoned the idea. Another example, one that I have in the book, is of a successful entrepreneur who had a daughter who had a disease in which she always got nosebleeds. She got nosebleeds very, very easily. So he invented a product that could go on top of her nose that would keep her nose from bleeding.
That's
now,
amazing.
There are many, many people who have this disease, and it was a godsend to them because they were able to, for a very low amount of money, they were able to stop a very serious problem. He did similar focus groups and found, oh my gosh, there is a huge need for this. And it turned out that he, in his pricing strategies, people would pay anything to keep their children who have this disease from getting nosebleeds.
Absolutely.
But he priced it fairly. And so he said, okay, well, this is how much it costs to manufacture, and this is how much it costs to produce. And he priced it fairly and is selling them like crazy. Now, one of the reasons that that's important is that anytime you have a product, a big corporation can figure out some other way to do it. A patent is only as useful as your ability to defend it in court. But since he priced it fairly, he has very loyal customers who aren't going to switch simply because they can get a similar product for a few cents less.
Well, that's
He is definitely the American dream come true.
That's a wonderful idea. I recall once, my husband and I were out with a group of children from the school, and a mother had not sent a note with one of the children who had nosebleeds, just as you're talking about. And we were in a part of New York State, and this was in the evening, and you know how hard it is to get medical care in the evening sometimes. And we had to drive the youngster 35 miles both ways to have her nose cauterized because there was no physician in the area and only a nurse who wasn't able to stop it. So, boy, we could have used it at that time.
Sure. The product is called Nosebuds.
I haven't heard of it.
It really is a fascinating story.
Now, what are how can you know whether people will come and buy your product? While you've talked about this, that this gentleman did focus group, is this always the best place to begin? And define a focus group for our audience.
A focus group is a small amount of people, somewhere around 10 to 15 usually. If you can get more, that's okay. You want to start with smaller groups and then get to bigger and bigger groups. These are people who would have a reasonable expectation of being able to comment on your product.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, for medical products, the focus group would be made of physicians or nurses who would be using it. For consumer products, it would be, for some products, just about anybody. So, for instance, if State Farm Insurance wanted to pitch some ideas about new insurance products or new commercials, they would pick people and they would pick their brain, and generally you make a little bit of money. I found that for small business owners, people are very generous with their time, and if you just provide cookies and drinks, then people will be happy to help you because most people are really good people. And what you do, I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, how much experience did you have before you actually start? In other words, what would you go, let's go through a list of things, just a short list of things a person should think about before he actually begins. In other words, he has a dream, he or she wants to start a business. What steps are absolutely necessary?
First thing is you want to have at least 3 to 5 years experience in the industry. Most people have that, but some don't. And the reason that people start those businesses is that they're bored to tears with their current job, and they say, I love golf, so I'm going to start a driving range, or I love cooking, so I'm going to start a restaurant, but don't really understand the business part of the business. So what I suggest is that what you do is go to a similar business and work as an apprentice or work for very little money, telling the person, I'm going to work and you teach me the business. And that can be a very, very good way to learn what you need to learn. Next thing you need to do is, I'm sorry.
How do you know when it's time to start with a part-time employee or a full-time employee? In other words, you start spending 24 hours a day thinking, sleeping, and eating your new business, and you may not have much money coming in. How do you work this all out so you actually can have a little bit of life for yourself?
Well, most small businesses don't have employees when they start, but after a while, you're going to need to hire people. And as you say, if you start working 18-hour days, 2 weeks in a row, you can't sustain that because you'll just get sick. So what most people do is that they will work until they're just exhausted. Or if they have employees, their employees are exhausted. Then most places will start hiring temporary people first. And you've got to be careful if you're going to hire a temporary person or a part-time person. Check with an employment attorney to make sure whether you can pay them as a contractor or an employee. Generally, you're going to have to pay them as an employee and withhold taxes and pay workers' comp and unemployment insurance and things like that.
So you really need to
know.
And
then if they work out, make them full-time.
You really need to know your employment laws.
You do, and that's why in The Successful Entrepreneur, I have a whole chapter on employment laws that you need to know. My experience has been that most people have no idea about employment laws, and that can get very expensive. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Is that a lot of people will sit there and say, okay, well, I'm going to have employees, and I'll pay them $7 an hour, but I'll pay them as contractors. But
well, by law, you have to pay them minimum wage, correct?
You have to pay the minimum wage, and then if they're an employee, you have to also pay matching FICA and Social Security, Medicare, unemployment. Well, all those little what we call statutory benefits are about 25% of someone's wages.
Oh, my.
And if you don't understand that, you're going to be way off right from the start. And so you need to check with an employment attorney about that. And in The Successful Entrepreneur, I give all the traps of the things that you need to know. And that way, having employees will be a wonderful thing. Because most entrepreneurs who have employees think that it's a wonderful thing because they get to be an important part of that person's life and they get to watch that person grow and develop. Because when you work for a small firm, you're generally not going to become very rich. And because most entrepreneurs can't pay a lot of money. So what you're going to do is you're going to trade income for quality of life. You're going to be the best place to work. And if you're the best place to work and you are a wonderful boss, you don't have to pay lots of money. Because when people go to work, they're going to be smiling most of the time because they get to work for you. And that is part of the American dream.
Well, that is a real dream. I think starting a business is very exciting. And how do you know how to charge for a product? Let's say, like this woman who invented her tray, how did she figure out the right price to put on her product? Did she use another focus group?
She didn't. She got lucky. And the reason she got lucky is that she priced it perfectly, just from gut instinct. Now, most people aren't able to do that. What you do instead is do some research. And what you do is you go to several people who could be customers, and you ask them three simple questions. Question one is, at what price would you doubt the quality of the product? You don't want to price it below that or near that because people are going to think it's not very good. Second question you ask them is, what price would you consider it to be a ripoff? It would just be too expensive. And the third question is, what do you think a fair price would be? And if you do this with maybe 30, 35 people who are potential customers, you're going to find the price to stay away from, both high and low, and a good fair price range. And you want to have your product in that sweet spot. Most people find that sweet spot through trial and error, but you don't have to do that. You can accelerate the process. Again, I've used these techniques for very large corporations, but they work just as well for entrepreneurs. When Ashley priced her product, she did it from gut feel, but afterwards, when I was writing the book and we did the research, we found that the product was perfectly priced and good for her.
Now, what about if you start your business and it isn't going very well? I think that it's very hard for most people to say, this isn't working. How do you know? What should you do? What's right?
Yeah, I included that chapter in The Successful Entrepreneur. And I really debated about whether I should include it because we want people to be successful, and the book
right.
is all about the American dream. But the reason I included that chapter was because so many people have got a business that just isn't working, and they keep after it for months or years after,
mm-hmm.
and they lose everything when they really shouldn't. The example I use is that if you put a frog in a pot of boiling water, the frog will jump out. If you put a frog in cold water and turn the heat up, the frog is cold-blooded, so it will adapt its temperature to its outside surroundings. Now, please, don't anybody do this to a frog.
I was just going to suggest that.
Yeah, don't do it to a frog. It's just an expression. But the idea is that you can get killed a little at a time rather than if you're like the frog in the boiling water, you'll say, oh, my gosh, this isn't working, and jump out.
Now,
so, how do you
talk
know?
About 5 years as being the first time, if you succeed, you will know it at the end of 5 years. That's a long time to wait.
It is a long time to wait, but the 5 year is the mark that if you've made it there, the probabilities of your being successful for a very long time are very, very high. So that's that 5 year magical mark. But each year brings in new challenges and great things. For instance, by year three, you're able to hire some employees. You're able to have a little bit of extra money. You've got customers who you really like. You've got employees who you really like. But you still have to work very, very hard. You still have to bring in new business. You still need to do a lot of things right. And so what happens is that by year five, that's when you're biking downhill at this point. And now you can just live off the income from the business. You can start a new business. You can add branches. But you've got a lot of options at year five that you don't have at year three, because year three, you're still in the growth phase.
Well, what do you do, and where can you get help all during this time, other than the organizations you mentioned, which are pretty much involved with starting business, or can they help you along the way as well?
Oh, they absolutely can help you along the way, and they really love doing that. The other thing you can do is call up people who are in similar businesses and share with them. That is a very effective way of getting ideas that have worked for other people that you may never have thought of, and you can also be very candid and share the things that aren't working so well for you or didn't work so well with you and your successes. And so most people don't spend a lot of time researching after the first few months, because they say, okay, that's all over with. But you really should. And there's so much information available, and you can also take some classes. This is a good time to go back to school and really learn marketing or really learn accounting or finance.
You really believe that people should be should have considerable knowledge before they try to do anything.
Sure. And now, no one knows about every subject, and so some knowledge you're going to have to buy. So you're going to need an accountant if you're not an accountant. You're definitely going to need a lawyer if you're not a lawyer. But you'll find that there's a lot of information that you can get for free or for low cost just by being savvy.
Now, if you're going to hire somebody and you have never done that before, interviewing is a difficult thing to do. You have to be able to screen people and select the best person. How do you do that?
You need to have a whole bunch of questions to ask people. Have several questions to ask people. After you get a group of employees, and you can do it through ads, through online ads, which I found to be very, very successful, you can sit there and bring in the people that you think are best to bring in. And then there's several questions in a successful entrepreneur which I give people to ask, and go down that list. My favorite question is, what's your ideal boss like? What's your ideal day like? Because if I'm nothing like that person, then that's not a good fit. And if their ideal day is nothing like the ideal day I can provide them, that's also not a good fit. So, on the other hand, once you find someone who wants to work for an entrepreneurial company, who wants to be part of your dream, who wants to make you successful and will also be successful in their own right, then you've found the match that's perfect.
What do you think, in your experience, and I know you've dealt with hundreds and hundreds of people, what kinds of businesses what areas seem to work the best to start a small business? Is there
right
any?
Now, the businesses that do not need a huge amount of capital are the businesses that work the best. So you don't want to start a multi-million-dollar business these days. It's just too risky, and most places can't find that money, even if even if they want it, unless they're willing to put down maybe 50-60%. So
which is quite a large piece of change.
It is, and most people don't have it. And if they do have it, it's because they're going to be getting an equity line on their house. And I always tell people, be very careful about the equity line on their house, because if the business is not successful, you're going to want to have a place to live.
What about folks who use credit cards to start business? I've heard that. I thought it was a strange idea, because it certainly can get you into trouble.
It can. Credit cards are the number one reason that people go bankrupt, is credit cards starting a business. 26-28% interest is very, very expensive. And credit cards can be fairly easy to get, which makes them so seductive. But you need to be very wary about that, because even though most credit cards have got little to no fees at the beginning, the fees can really, really add up. And you're going to want to make sure that you can pay the debt service that you have. And I would tell people, if you have the choice of starting a business with credit cards or waiting, I would always say wait, because you want to own the business. You don't want the business to own you.
Oh, my, 26-28%, that sounds like usury.
It used to be. It used to be. But most of the credit cards are based in states like South Dakota that don't have any usury laws.
I see. So anybody can charge anything.
Exactly.
That's unbelievable. How do you, what about leadership? You have to have some relationship plans for your business and the people who work with you, so that there's comfort and everybody gets along in a pleasant way, because there's nothing worse than having a business where there are problems between people.
Right. Right. Leadership is getting things done, sometimes with authority and sometimes without authority. And no matter who you are, you are a leader once you start a business. People are going to be looking to you for answers. And that may be something that you have got a lot of experience with, and it may be your first foray into leadership. However, having the title of boss, that's what you get. In the good times, people are going to look to you, and if when things are struggling, people are also going to look to you.
But one of the things is
that you'll find that if you have an optimistic outlook and you really understand people and you are honest with people, that's really the key to successful leadership.
You just answered my next question, and I was going to say, what are the traits of a good leader? And you did it.
Honesty. Honesty is an integrity, and people will respect that. And think of the leaders that you've known whom you've respected the most. And most people say, well, it's because they were good listeners, they had good ethics, and they treated me really well, and they treated me like an adult.
That's a perfect example for anything, whether it's business and teaching in any profession. Now, do people need a strong business plan? How do you create a business plan?
There's a lot of good templates out there. The Small Business Administration has one online that people can get for free. The business plan in itself is very useful. However, if you just make up numbers off the top of your head, it's a waste of everyone's time. So what you need to do is do your research. Find out what realistic expenses are. Find out what realistic revenues are. And then when you plug the numbers in, they're meaningful numbers. Because I can take the software and I can make any business plan look great. But if I'm just making up numbers, then it's not going to be useful. The other thing is that it's a very human tendency to want to ignore negative evidence. You're going to only want to look to the positives and not look to the negatives. And there's a lot of positives to business ownership. It's a great lifestyle. But you need to be aware of the negatives also. And that way, when the negatives present themselves, they're not a crisis, they're an expected event.
tell me about the statistics. I had heard some really high percentages for failures in the first year. Can you give us some idea of that?
Yeah, most businesses, I would say about 85% will fail within 3 years. In the first year, it's about 50 to 60%. Now, most businesses that fail are still making a profit. But the problem is that the time I'm spending on the business, I can make much more money as a cashier at any retail place. And so I realized that it's better off to work for a company where I've got benefits and vacation days and holidays paid. And so business failure does not always mean losing money. And many times they're making money, just not enough to support you and to justify the time you're spending.
Right. I remember a gentleman that I knew who had a full-time job. This is a number of years ago, and you mentioned ice cream. I guess everybody loves ice cream, so you know. It's something that you enjoy being around. And he and his wife purchased a franchise, which we'll talk about after this. And they were working 80 hours a week, no employees. His wife was handling the business, and he would join her after his regular job. Fortunately, they had a regular job. And they were bringing in $30,000, and you're well aware of what franchises cost.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept going and going and going, and we had left the area, so I don't know what happened, but it seemed like they were chasing something that couldn't quite succeed, and they wanted to do it so badly, they kept working at it and working at it. What do you have to say about franchises?
Franchises can be very, very successful, and you're going to pay a lot of money for franchises, but like anything else, you really need to do your research. Some franchises have just grown so fast that the people are not profitable, and you really have to make sure that you're not one of 30 places in the area. But if you do your research and find there's a market, they're also going to give you all of the infrastructure you need, the products you need, and they can be a very nice way of bridging the experience gap. But Consumer Reports often has reports about the best franchises to start, and that's a very good place to begin.
Yes, well, that's interesting. I suppose everybody in his lifetime has gone to a meeting of a franchisor coming in to tell everybody about the hottest new business in the world. And how did you get involved? I know your degrees are in both psychology and management and leadership. How did you get involved in wanting to do this kind of thing?
Well, my wife and I have owned some small businesses, and we just thought it was a great lifestyle. And one of the nice things about being a professor is that I have students from all over come in, and I worked for a consulting firm, and I was helping small, medium, and large businesses become successful. And so I really enjoy that, helping people.
Well, I must say, if anybody wanted to start a business, your consultancy would be very worthy. That's we think that your book is quite amazing. For our audience, The Successful Entrepreneur is available at Amazon. It's available at the publisher, glenbridgepublishing.com. And it will take you from your dream to your plan right into the business, and it will help you all along the way. And if you run into any difficulty, one can always come to Tom Anastasi. Now, how long have you been doing this, Tom?
I've been doing this for 25 years.
Well, that seems like a long time, but it just seems like yesterday, I bet.
I know.
You have what types of businesses that were unusual did you discover while you've been doing this?
Well, when I got out of graduate school, I was the ninth employee for Dragon Systems. They do speech recognition software. Mm-hmm. And they were a very small company at that time, and now they're a very big company. And it was wonderful because as a freshly minted graduate student, I was able to use everything I learned in taking them from just a few thousand dollars in sales a month to a multi-million dollar company.
Well, that's incredibly gratifying, and I'm sure they were very, very happy about your work.
They were.
What kind of businesses did you and your wife start?
My wife and I have owned a miniature golf course, mm-hmm. Which was a lot of fun, and we ended up selling it after we had our first daughter, and I have run a small theater company in New Hampshire for the past several years.
And you are plan to continue this until you can't do it anymore.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's been delightful talking with you. I'm sorry we've had phone trouble, but sometimes that occurs. And if anyone would like to send questions along to us, you can address them to Glenbridge Publishing at qwestoffice.net, and I'll share them with Tom, and I'm sure he'd be happy to answer them. And Tom, we want to thank you for giving us your time this evening. We hope that anyone in the audience who's been thinking about a business feels just a little bit more comfort in going ahead with understanding it and getting a copy of The Successful Entrepreneur, An American Dream Done Right. And Tom, thank you so much for being with us this evening. And to our audience, next week, our guest will be Dr. Michael Edelstein, clinical psychologist who's the author of 3-Minute Therapy, Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life. And Michael was awarded Author of the Year by his peers for this book, and you will have a wonderful time listening to his background. And we look forward to seeing you next week. And Tom, once again, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Good night now.
Good night.